Although you did just walk all the way to the bathroom and back. You want to take a break?
Weird thing is, I'm in pretty good shape, which is what's so strange about that. I think I just wasn't thinking and I was just talking and not breathing. You know?
Never a good idea. All right. How are we doing this as if it's Tuesday, or are we being honest with the listeners and telling them it's really Monday?
We're messing them up. Like, this is
like last week it was Wednesday, yeah, and they got all bitter, and now this week it's Monday.
What if I went off the rails and actually posted this tonight? They wouldn't know what to do with themselves.
Dogs and cats living together.
Mass hysteria.
Okay, so it could be Monday, or it's Monday for Bill and I, but it's probably Tuesday for you.
But it could be Wednesday if you're in Australia.
That's right. So Kingsley, it's Australian. It's Wednesday, and it's Australian Wednesday.
It's Australian Wednesday.
It sounds like a bar.
It's spelled Australian upside down.
That's right. That's right. It's episode 178 of the On Taking Pictures radio program.
And it's amazing. I don't hear any airplanes, any cars.
Yeah.
Keep going. Sorry.
Yeah. Should we? Here.
No, we'll get to that.
Wait, hold on. Hold on. Hold on.
Yeah. You know, I could have said. There you go. That was last week. Finish the intro.
David Gardner's looking around his car, trying to decide whether he should pull over or not.
Are there dancers on the side of the road? Go ahead.
Oh, it's fun. So it is episode 178 for those of you keeping track. This is On Taking Pictures. What was I supposed to introduce you as?
Who said that? Was it the sardonically irreverent?
No.
Didn't somebody give us that stuff, though? They threw that back at us.
Something about that. Yeah, that was from Eugene Levy.
Not Waiting for Kaufman. Yeah.
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 I don't know. I'll think of it in a minute. Anyway, Jeffrey Sidoris, Bill Wadman. And... wait, how far back are we going first? Are we going just yesterday back and then further back? Or do you want to start further back and work our way forward to the present?
Well, why don't we start with last week? So we asked people what they thought of last week's show, which was a day late just because we had to edit it and I had to get back to New York to post it. And also was a walk and talk on the street, lav mics, you know, out there in the world.
Out there.
And we got, I don't know, probably a dozen, two dozen responses back from people.
I think that's low. I think that's...
It was more than that? Okay.
Yeah, because there were a lot. I got some Twitter direct messages.
Oh, you got lots
of... I got a couple emails.
Okay, fair enough. All right, and so whatever.
Overwhelmingly positive, I think.
Yeah, let's say 90% positive. Want to go higher than that?
I think it was higher.
Okay, 95% positive.
I think maybe 95.7% higher.
A handful of people didn't like it.
Yeah, one guy really didn't like it.
Yeah, but I think he just really doesn't like you. Just putting that out there.
That's entirely possible.
It was actually me, right?
Spoofed you. Yeah. I thought it was really fun. I had a great time. I wouldn't do it all the time.
Right.
The ambient noise didn't bother me as much as you and I kind of zoned in on the same thing. It was very strange not to be able to sort of cue up our outline, because every week that we do the show, we each have the show notes in a Google Doc kind of sitting in front of us, and we can, you know, look things up if need be, or Bill will paste in a link, or I'll paste in a link to Bill in Skype, and not having those little comforts was odd, and doing everything sort of off the cuff was
guideposts.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, but, look, we could have done a little more planning, and if we do one in New York, we'll do a little more planning, you know?
Yeah, and maybe the first part of it is a walk and talk, and then we go sit somewhere that's quieter and have the discussion.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Enough.
Maybe that would be fun.
Yeah, so anyway, so that was fun.
Yeah, yeah.
If anybody else has any feedback, let us know.
Right.
Yeah.
Podcast at ontakingpictures.com.
There you go.
Yep.
And then we had a little meetup in Asbury Park yesterday.
I got to say, though, it was really fun meeting your mom finally. It's very strange that...
Oh, you met my mom last week, yeah.
Yeah, that I've known you, and it was just odd to finally put the face with the name and the voice and all, yeah, you know, so yeah. it was very cute.
My mom's all right. She's
a good lady.
She's a good lady. Yeah.
Good lady.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm sorry. You were going...
I just said we had a good time in Asbury Park yesterday.
That was a good time.
So what did you think about the East Coast beach experience? I mean, not that we went to the beach per se, but we were on the beach, on the boardwalk.
You know, is
it what you imagined a boardwalk on the East Coast would be like?
No, no. In fact, the homes, the architecture was a lot more quaint, sort of Americana than what I was expecting from New Jersey, and I'm told that there are parts of New Jersey where it's not like that.
18 million people just shut off the show.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's, you know, you get a representation of New Jersey in television and film that's maybe a myopic view of just like anything else.
You know, you thought it would be like an entire strip of bada bing strip clubs?
I didn't know what to expect.
Okay,
but I didn't expect this sort of almost a Midwestern feel, you know, Norman Rockwell-y kind of feel to the architecture, the homes, it was just quaint, right?
Yeah.
It was great, and the boardwalk was nice.
What did you think about that pinball museum?
The pinball museum was terrific. Yeah,
that
was pretty cool. I mean, pinball machines from the late 40s, I guess, was
early 50s and stuff. Yeah, old ones.
All the way through what was the most recent one? Maybe 2005, something like that.
Yeah, we should do, anybody who's interested in pinball who hasn't watched it, go watch that. What was it? Special When Lit? Is that what it was called?
That's the documentary. Yeah, yeah, which was really good. Really good.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes.
I mean, it was fun. I don't know that I feel the need to go back anytime soon.
To New Jersey or to Asbury Park?
To Asbury Park. I'd like to experience other parts of New Jersey.
Sure. It's nice in the summertime when you like are actually out on the beach and swimming and stuff. And there's a lot more people around.
I don't really like the beach though.
All right.
I don't like
then it's not the place for you.
Gritty. Ugh. I like rocky beaches, you know, cold.
you're just full of fun, aren't you?
Yeah. Long rocky beaches and you by the bay.
Yeah. Me?
Yeah. Come on, you didn't get that? Come on.
No, I got it.
All right.
Thanks, you, Barry.
Thank you. No, my pleasure. So, yeah, it was super fun, and it was terrific seeing everyone, and it was great to go see, you know, Wonder Bar and the Stone Pony and, you know, the Paramount Theater, which we got to go inside and go up in the balcony. That was a beautiful building.
Yep.
But mostly it was just terrific to see, you know, all the people that were kind enough to come out. That was really cool.
So we're going to do another one where? In D.C. or maybe New York at some point?
New York at some point. D.C. I think is probably the next logical one. There's an Irving Penn show that opens up on the 28th of October.
Okay.
For those of you who are interested in seeing Dan Winters, Dan will be lecturing at the National Portrait Gallery, courtesy of ASMP. Tickets are free to that. That's November 10th. If you just go to the National Portrait Gallery's website or ASMP.org, I think there's a link there, and maybe we can add a link in the show notes. I've already registered for it. I don't know how many tickets are left. I don't know even if tickets are left, to be honest with you. But if you have an interest in seeing Dan Winters, that might be a fun thing. That's November 10th.
Maybe what we can do is shoot for that next weekend to have the meetup, the 14th, weekend of the 14th.
Maybe. Yeah, there's something going on there.
Okay.
I don't know what. Let me look. But yeah, sometime in there.
Yeah. Well, that should be fun.
Yeah.
Come back down there. And what else we got for cleanup stuff? Oops, just dropped my pencil. Fred Levy's book.
Fred Levy, Black Dogs Project.
Now that's some hard stuff to print right there.
I would imagine
black on black.
So. I would imagine so. Fred was kind enough to send me a copy of it, and it is a really beautiful book. What I like about it is, yes, there are photographs, sure. But more than that is the inclusion of the stories behind the dogs. some of whom are no longer with us. So, you know, it's
the story behind the woof.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, you know, congratulations, Fred. Good on you. Love it. Love that you've done this. Love that you've embraced this project and this body of work. And best of luck. I hope this really works out for you.
Very, very cool stuff.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Am I looking at the notes here?
Oh, do you?
I got another book from a company called Glitterati, and I hadn't ever heard of this guy. Bill Hayward is the photographer's name, artist, photographer, and a terrific writer, by the way. The book is called Chasing Dragons. I put a review up, and Bill was kind enough to write me back and thank me for writing the review. I thought I was late to the game, but it looks like this is the first review of the book that's gone up.
See, there you go. You're ahead of the game.
I finally scooped somebody, right. but really terrific work, a lot of mixed media work. Yes, traditional photography. Yes, portraiture. Yes, experimental work, fine art work. If you've got a bookstore handy that's got art and photo books, go flip through it, give it a look. I think you might enjoy it.
I'm looking at some pictures from your article as we speak.
Yeah, we'll put a link interesting work.
Totally.
And that's it. What do you okay. What do you got?
So last week we got in this conversation again, like you said, without notes, right? Sans harnesses.
What?
Without a net. We were live without a net.
Live without a net. Right.
Just like Eddie Van Halen.
I thought he was live without a hip.
Oh, does he have a bad hip?
I think he had his hip replaced.
Did he?
Or was it a knee? No, I think it was a hip.
Isn't that sad? Like these like hardcore rock stars, and then like later in life, they're like drinking bottled water and getting their hips replaced.
Yeah, but geez, I mean, he spent 30 years jumping off the stage.
Well, this is something he should not have done. It's true. No, it's absolutely true. Yeah.
You know, and he's still, I think he sounds and looks fantastic.
There are results. Everything you do results in something, right? Like there is, no matter, you may think that you're young and can do anything you want to your body or to your life, and there are always repercussions, you know?
Cause and effect. Sure.
Yep. Yeah. It's good stuff. Sure. Anyway,
for example, I drank a coffee Nutella milkshake in Asbury Park in the morning. And
you
did
not sleep at night.
I felt awesome the rest of the day. So cause and effect.
Yeah, yes, it's exactly the coffee Nutella milkshake. Nice. So we were talking about process. We were talking about change, right? And
sure.
And fighting against it. And it's like, I don't feel like I actually said what I wanted to say. So do you mind if I sort of do a quick little, we'll do a little quick little 5-10 minute thing here?
I don't mind. No.
Okay.
I don't really even remember what we said. You know why?
Because it was before the chocolate and Nutella milkshake.
I was in the moment, man.
Oh, you were in the moment. Okay.
I was present for you, Bill. I was present. That's what they call that. Present.
Okay. I was walking. I don't know.
you were wheezing.
So genius.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go on the rowing machine another 700 miles.
Right.
I was just saying how the idea that I was trying to get across that I feel like I didn't get across is this. I think that we tend to define ourselves by our process, right? In the sense that I take these kinds of pictures because I've gone through many iterations and I've gotten, I like taking pictures this way. And that's led to iterative changes down some line of thinking that's led me to where I am now. Right.
Sure.
And the idea of switching equipment or switching the way I do things or switching the media that I use or switching the way that I express myself in putting out into the world, if it's a technological thing, like, you know, feeling forced to use social media stuff when somebody doesn't want to, or what, you know, there's all kinds of things like that, right?
Mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
we define ourselves by those things. And maybe that's why when things change, we have a hard time with change because we define ourselves by so many of these sort of little mechanical things within our process. And we see ourselves as the person who makes images this way, right? You know, for example, let's take the surf stuff, Joni Sternbach, right?
Yep.
You know, she does her wet plate in a large format camera and whatever it is. Okay. Could she take those pictures with another camera? Of course she could. Would they look exactly the same? No. Would they still be her pictures? Of course. But somehow it's not what she's trying to do. And if somebody suddenly said, you can't get the chemicals to do this anymore, she'd probably have a pretty big mental battle going on in her head. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. In that, yeah. in that instance, the tool is so directly connected
yeah.
to the output.
Yeah.
To the aesthetics, to the look and feel of her work. Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, yeah. And I use her as an extreme example because that's sure. a very obvious thing. But I think the same thing is true in all of ourselves in a smaller way even, you know, because we were doing the OVF EVF thing, which we don't have to get back into. But like we were talking about that. It's just like this doesn't feel right to me because I've done it this way for so long, you know, that kind of thing.
OK, and, but could you get the same results? For example, yesterday you took my X-Pro for the day.
Yeah, I shot your X-Pro. Yeah.
Could you take that? I mean, if you took that camera, I don't know, into the corner, let's say, and did yeah. your corner portraits, I would argue that they wouldn't look. I don't think they would look much different at all, to be honest with you, because
they might not look drastically different, but it would feel different making them.
Sure. Okay. And that's kind of what I'm getting at is how far down, yeah.
but I mean,
how far down your curve or where yeah. on the curve does that affect the end product?
Yeah. I mean, look, with the digital stuff, there's very few cameras that any of us use or different equipment or, you know, whether I use Einstein's or I use Profoto or I use Broncolor, like within reason, I can get a similar effect by any of those, depending on how I use them, you know? So with digital in some ways, it's almost harder to argue that a particular piece of equipment is required to do a certain kind of work, you know, because sure. there are so many, because this stuff is all of such high quality, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I guess my question is that such a bad thing? Isn't that what is supposed
what
to
such a bad thing?
Is being stuck in your process? And I use stuck not as a pejorative, but as just a definition, you know, Is that a bad thing to have built up an identity with how you do work?
If it becomes a crutch, I think it is.
Well, how do you? Well, okay, so what is a crutch? I guess there's a
say,
question.
Well, if you take away my 5D3,
I can't work.
I can't do this.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
Right. Sure. Yeah. But isn't that what is supposed to happen? Aren't we supposed to? I don't know. Define ourselves by something, you know, in the same way that a writer, you know, a writer who sits down and works a certain amount of hours a day for, let's say, I don't know, Stephen King goes up and writes for 3 hours a day or whatever it is on his typewriter in his little room. Could Stephen King type on an iPad in a loud coffee shop in Manhattan every day? Well, sure he could, but that's not what he's.
But those are changing multiple variables.
Okay. Okay.
That's not just changing the equipment. That's changing setting. That's changing environment.
That's
changing a number of things.
Right. So, but I mean, should we all be such blank slates that none of this stuff really matters? Or is it okay that we sort of say, no, this is the way I do it. And this is the way I like doing it. And I do it this way for a reason. And that's okay. Like, isn't this what is supposed to happen? That we're supposed to sort of create this identity of how we work.
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Okay, that's my question.
I think that the where art or where great product or where, you know, first of all, I think for the purposes of this discussion, let's agree on an end product term. So whatever that is, whether art, so the end product. Let's just call it the end product.
Sure.
I think that. The quality, and I'm using quality, I've got my air quotes up, the quality of that end product is largely the result of how we deal with the barriers between the idea and the production of that product.
Okay.
So, yes, the tools are important to a certain extent, but only insofar as they are part of this process to get there.
Right,
steps needed to get there.
Well, I mean, the process is also a number of the building blocks in this chain. They're just harder to define, which is why I haven't been using them. But like, you know, if you like to paint a certain way with certain motions, because that's the way you get your best results. And somebody says, well, that's the wrong way to do it because you should be painting this way. You know, the wrong way might be the right way for you.
Yes. Yes. But, again, you can get stuck. For example, I'm going to Gardner's going to cringe. I'm going to use Rush as an example.
Oh boy.
You've got, Neil Peart, arguably one of the best, by many people's accounts, the best rock and roll drummer ever to play.
Yep.
Right. Apologies to Bonham or Keith Moon fans, but here he is at the top of his game, decides that he wants to go back and relearn how to play, how to hold, how to move, how to gesture while he's playing the drums. And what he discovered was a renewed sense of fluidity and timing and a style of playing that was still very much him, but it wasn't the same kind of effort.
Right.
Now, had he not done that, had he just continued to play like Neil Peart, nothing to us as listeners would have really changed.
Right.
But to him, he decided to sort of unlearn what he had learned. Right?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the mark of somebody who's still searching.
I agree. And the same is true of, Tiger Woods building his swing up from the ground up again or what have you. Right. I mean, these are similar kinds of things, but in the example of Neil Peart, he knew that he was, I'm going to use subjective terms here just because like he knew that he was playing incorrectly and he chose to change.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, he's choosing to change. It wasn't like somebody said to him, you're doing it wrong. You need to change. And no one forced him to do it. You know,
sure.
He wanted to grow. Right.
Sure.
And so if
somebody comes up to you and says, you're lighting these corner portraits all wonky
wrong
and wrong
or whatever. Yeah.
Are you going to go, oh, really? Or are you going to go, screw you? These are the way it's the way I want to do it.
Well, I'm happy with the way they're lit. So I'd probably say screw you in that particular case. Right.
Right. So, if you're comfortable and you're achieving result X, then you may be reluctant to change anything for fear of achieving result Y.
Yeah. 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 I somewhere on the curve has to be a point at which there is a, there is always searching, always changing to find a new way of doing it. And then there must be on the other end, the person who never actually gets anywhere because they're chasing their tail, trying to find the new thing all the time.
Maybe, but I think that there's more nuance in between those things.
It's a huge gray spectrum.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm just saying at some point there's gotta be a line, you know,
as a rule, there are those people. And it's not even a rule, but there seem to be those people who are of the belief that I'm always able to learn, and it is about the sort of space between the two points.
Yep.
And then there are those people who are of the opinion that I've learned all I need to learn about this, and I'm just going to keep doing it the way I do it.
Well, I think you're putting it incorrectly there. I think there are people who, I think all people always think that there's something else to learn. I think if the new things you want to learn are macro or micro, as it were, you know, there's the Japanese, calligrapher who's, drawing circles his whole life has been drawing circles since he was 20. Now he's 88 years old, but he's gotten better at doing that because he's been doing it for 60 years. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there is a certain, and did he learn, does he think that he knows everything there is about circles? No, he's still drawing circles precisely because he knows that he doesn't know everything about drawing circles.
Sure.
So there's an argument on that side too. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Which always, it's just fascinating to me. I guess it's sort of a matter if you want to go really deep or like skip around on the water and get more horizontal exploration or more vertical exploration, you know, to some extent. I think we all understand that we don't know everything.
Where are you on that curve? Are you wanting to spread out?
I'm probably somewhere in the middle where there are elements of the stuff that I do where I'm trying to perfect the same thing. And then there are elements of the stuff where I do weird stuff just to see what's different, mm-hmm. you know?
You talked about on the last show when we were walking around that there would be, might even been the week before, but there would be an end at some point to the corner.
Yeah, probably in a couple weeks or so.
So what's been the takeaway? Why end it? Why are you ending now? Where have you plateaued, I guess? What point have you reached where you can't go any further now? Why now as opposed to a month ago?
I wanted to get a few more people in that I wanted to get in front of my camera in mm-hmm, the corner mm-hmm. before it ended.
So it's not a technical or an aesthetic sort of I've done all I can here.
It's not all I can do here, but it is I've done enough of this.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Time to change it up.
Will you use this
the etch a sketch?
Sure. Yeah,
shake the etch a sketch.
Will you use this as a springboard for the next thing, or do you feel like now you've got to go in a completely different direction to sort of wash the corner off your hands kind of thing?
I will probably keep the corner, but repaint it. Mm-hmm. So it'll mm-hmm. be a new background, although I probably won't do it as, I think I've shot 50 people there. Mm-hmm. I've shot a lot of people in a year. I won't be shooting another 50 people on the new background, but I like having a thing in my apartment where I can just put somebody if they are over and I need to shoot them.
Sure.
It's nice having that. But doing something different. Like I started doing this Mylar project, so that's really weird and different. So, like, you know, for me. So
this is the distortions.
Yeah, the distortion
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's about as far away from the corner as you can get. Sure. There's a good example, right? Yeah, I've done 50 people in the corner, but I've also done stuff like the crazy thing with the distortion. So, you know, those are very different things. But then again, I've gone really deep into the corner, you know. I guess the thing is, I like both of those things. I like drawing circles for 60 years, and I like looking around what's around the next corner, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wonder if it's not a deficiency of mine not to choose one or the other, you know. But I guess, but that's just sort of Monday morning quarterbacking in my own head.
Right.
Because, you know, it's, you worry that you're going to be a master of none, you know?
But what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? What's, you know, we put a lot of weight on mastering something. What's wrong with just being a good
dabbling,
all-arounder.
To yeah, be
what's,
dabbler.
What's wrong with being, yeah. you know?
I guess, I mean, it comes down to what kind of satisfaction that you get from that. You know, I've been having a lot of conversations. Conrad and I are going to Europe in a few weeks. And and we talk to a lot of friends of ours who go to Europe. And we're going to a couple of cities that we've never been to before. So we're sort of people we know who have been there. We're talking to them just saying, hey, you have any recommendations, that kind of thing.
Right.
And some of the people, I am very much the kind of traveler, and half the people who are listening right now are going to like cringe when I say this. I am a list traveler.
Yeah, you know? It would exhaust me to travel with you.
Right, right. It's just a very different thing. The idea of sitting down in a cafe and watching people walk by for 4 hours in Paris is just like, that blows my mind that I would spend four. If I have 26 hours in Paris, I'm not going to spend four of them sitting drinking coffee. There's things I want to see in Paris that I can't do anywhere else. I can drink coffee anywhere. So, see, but there
don't
are
drink coffee, so that's a bad example.
Okay, bad example. But there are other people who, you know, I have friends who, when they went to Paris, didn't go to any of the museums, just went to, had an apartment that they, a little apartment that they rented, and they went to the market and they went home and they made meals for themselves. And that's how they enjoyed Paris, right?
Right. Which sounds lovely, by the way.
Yes, it sounds lovely, but I can go to the market and make meals at home. There's nothing about Paris that would change that except being in Paris. To me, that's the way I, like, my mind sort of clicks through that. So I think that there are people experience things in different ways and get certain satisfaction out of things in different ways. So in the same way that I want to see things when I'm travel, I may be the kind of person who wants to sort of become a master at a single thing, whatever that thing is, you know?
Right. Right.
And I think that there are other people for whom, you know, traveling through the list of different photography stuff. I mean, look how many people we know who, they're more all arounder photographers, even if they're professional, amateur, whatever, let's say amateurs, you know, people who are just photography nuts and they shoot landscapes when they're on vacation. They shoot street photos when they're in the city. They shoot portraits of their friends and family or their kids or whatever it is, you know, they shoot astrophotography when the sun goes down, you know,
right.
They're like all over the place because they want to do all of these things because what they're really into is photography. They're not into, it's not specifically about portrait photography, say for me or what have you, you know?
Correct.
It's like, it's just, you scratch a different itch, right? Everybody's got different itches they want to scratch. I find it fascinating. But I guess the answer to the initial question I said is that, or that I brought up is that maybe some people are defined by their process and some people are defined by their anti-process, you know?
Right. The lack of any sort of definable or reproducible process.
Yeah. Yeah. I find it interesting. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, if you go a whole career, you know, interesting that you bring up Neil Peart though, but he did have a very specific way of playing. He just decided to sort of go back to basics and start from scratch midlife. Right. It wasn't that he was just sort of willy-nilly. He was very serious about it before, and he was very serious about it afterwards, you know, which I totally respect and understand. And interestingly enough, his newer technique was far more traditional, in quotes, than his original technique, you know.
Absolutely.
Was he having problems? Right. Was he having problems, though? Physical problems, like repetitive stress kind of RSI kind of stuff?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I was just wondering if maybe it was because the technique that I came up with when I was younger that got me this far, it is actually a limitation now. And that is why I have to change.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I have to read more whatevers.
You have to read more whatevers?
More books about Neil Peart.
Ah, well, there are several.
Did he do a self autobiography?
Not yet. Not yet.
I'm sure he will.
But I mean, to go back and you know, at the top of your game and go back and basically start over.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I mean, well, he also has the luxury to do that, right? In the sense that he's successful enough that he can say, you know what, guys, we're not going to tour for the next 2 years and I'm going to go hang out with yogis in Egypt.
I mean, it didn't really happen that way. They shut down after his wife and daughter were killed.
Oh, is that when he made the big change?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he made it before then. Okay, no, my bad.
When he came back after that, he didn't know if he could play because he hadn't played and.
Ah, I see. Okay, so there is a lot more to it. I thought that was later. Okay, my bad.
And he was just, he was doing, you know, he wanted to explore a different style of playing. He did this Buddy Rich tribute.
Sure.
And then started studying
with Freddie
Gruber.
Man, these guys can play.
right.
Yeah, it's like watching White Knights like I did a few weeks ago. Man, that Pershnikov can dance.
Hmm. He was good.
Especially back then in the 80s, he was like on fire.
Sure.
I'm telling you, the opening credits to White Knights is like one of the more impressive dance things I've ever seen. He's just amazing.
Put it in the show notes. Go on.
I got to find it. I only have a thing I found. Hey, just wanted to make a little note before we get to a commercial. Gustav Kaibot is at the National Gallery.
Right.
And it is great, great stuff. And interestingly enough, I walked in there and I was looking at the paintings and is there until October 4th. So if you want to go see it, you have to go see it before October 4th. And if you are in the DC area and into this, into art in any way, I would highly recommend going to see it. It's great stuff. But even looking at them, I looked at them and instantly you go, oh, that feels like a photograph, and not that it's photorealistic, although they're very well done. There's just this sense of that's a perspective that somebody would see through a camera, not what somebody would see with their eyes.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Okay.
And interestingly enough, I went and looked him up on Wikipedia. And one of the things it says, the third sentence is, Kaibot is noted for his early interest in photography as an art form.
Sure.
And
big Nikon shooter, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And they talk about how that while there's no evidence of him using photography to base his paintings off of, he was a serious photographer, but he wanted sort of, he used to say he wanted an optical truth, which is interesting. And like the way he crops things and how things are half in and out of frame and that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's just not the kind of stuff you would ever do if you were painting in a more traditional way, you know, like he was definitely doing something different. So anyway, excellent stuff like that. Floor scrapers, killer.
The Floor Scrapers is a fantastic piece.
Yeah.
And I would love to see it. I've never seen it in person.
Yeah. So you definitely need to get down there. And then there's, of course, the Paris Street Rainy Day one from the Art Institute of Chicago. You know, the people with the umbrellas in the square. That one definitely feels like a photo. Some of them are like fantastically so. Just really, really, really beautiful work. And so if you're in DC, go check it out. That's all I would say. How you doing? You all right?
I'm all right. I'm good.
You're good? Are you really good?
I'm super good.
Feels weird doing this in the afternoon. Oh, was I not supposed to say that?
Damn it. Good job, dude.
Oh, I'm going to take a drink of my water right now. You got a song
even,
for Squarespace?
Even sober, you're a buzzkill. Jesus.
I know. It's terrible. do you have a song for Squarespace this week?
I don't have a song for Squares other than the song in my heart.
You're like, but I have a dance.
I'm chair dancing right now. Chair dancing.
Hey, we were watching Flashdance the other day just because I had never seen it. And Heather's like, oh, you have to turn it on for like 5 minutes just to see like three scenes. And she showed me the three scenes. And of course, it's not actually Jennifer Beals.
Was one of the scenes where she was welding?
Yes,
that was kind of
that's exactly what she wanted to show me.
Yeah.
And of course, it's not actually Jennifer Beals' body when she's actually dancing. It's like some woman dancer.
No, it's this French dancer.
Yeah.
Whose name escapes me.
Yeah. Who apparently is some relatives of Heather's know because she's like the wife of a friend's friend, which I just thought was great. You know, still around and kicking.
French dancer.
Up a storm. What's her name?
Flashdance.
She was not credited as far as I know.
Marine Jahan.
There you go. Fantastic. Good dancer too. It's all those scenes with the backlit silhouette stuff. It's good stuff.
Right. With the water that drops where they drain, you know, dump the bucket on her.
Yeah. You ever do that?
All the time.
I figured as much. Hey, if you want to make your Flashdance...
I can't find my leg warmers and my sweatshirt with the sleeves cut off, though.
So. If you know, by the way, they made that... She did the sweatshirt thing because she washed the sweatshirt incorrectly and it wouldn't fit her, so she just cut the top out of it so she could wear it, and then it became a huge thing. Like, that was not planned.
Jennifer Beals, fashion icon.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So if you want to make your Flashdance fan site like Jeffrey, go over to Squarespace.
That's right.
How many of those do you have? You got more than one of them?
I went the extra distance.
Yeah.
I went to the Michael Cimbello fan site.
Oh, he's the lead guy?
No, he's the guy who sang Maniac.
Oh, Maniac, right.
So she's I've got a just maniac. A yeah, I've just got a medley of his hit playing over and over again.
Do you know did you ever the scene in Tommy Boy where he's like Rob Lowe is spraying down, what's his name, with water because they were out in the cow fields.
Yes.
And he's like jumping up and down singing the Maniac song.
Yeah. Yeah. Farley.
Oh, yeah. That's a funny scene.
Yeah.
That's
Farley
a good
was a funny guy.
That's a good movie.
Fat guy in a little coat.
Hey, if you want to build a website, Squarespace is the easiest way to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. These sites are fantastic, guys. Look at BillWadman.com. Look at your Jeffrey Sidor.
What? Or if you want a fantastic site.
Yeah. It's good stuff. I like that. Craig Ward's site. What is it? Craig Words Are Pictures.
Words.co.uk. Yep. Yep.
Great stuff. In fact, I think his site was on their front page a few weeks ago as like one of their examples.
What do you know what template he uses?
Yeah, I do. Wait, one is called Wexley and one is called, it's not Wexley. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
Sites that look professionally designed, regardless of your skill level. You don't need to know any coding like Jeffrey and I used to have to know. These things are intuitive. They're easy to use tools, unlike the ones that Jeffrey and I used to have to use.
There weren't tools. There was just text edit.
Yes.
Squarespace
has a state-of-the-art technology powering your site to ensure security and stability. So no matter what, your site stays up. You know, during the Sandy hurricane, they had their data centers here. They were doing a bucket brigade to bring diesel down to the basement to keep the machines going on a generator. Do you know that?
Is that true?
I do believe it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, fantastic. It's never these a good idea. Are,
what?
A bucket brigade of diesel fuel. Hey, Stan, I'm going out for a smoke. I'll be right.
No. Hey, it worked though. Everything stayed up. And it's trusted by millions of people and some of the most respected brands in the world. Starts at only $8 a month, and you'll get a free domain name if you sign up for a year. So if you want Flashdance is my favorite movie because my name is JeffreySidoris.com, you can get that free if you just buy a year's worth of Squarespace starting at $8 a month. So start your free risk-free trial today with no credit card required at squarespace.com. And when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, please use the offer code OTP and you'll get 10% off your first purchase and show your support for On Taking Pictures. Thank you very much to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and On Taking Pictures. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
Build it beautiful.
What was their last one? Their last little tagline.
Build
it beautiful.
Gosh,
is nice. It was because you got the alliteration there, but like
it was the Jeff Bridges one when they did the Jeff Bridges sleeps.
Yeah.
What
was that? Yeah, yeah. Jeff Bridges, odd man.
Hey, now
be careful.
You know, I'll tolerate a lot of shit from you, but you treading on thin ice, Mister.
Nice. It's good stuff.
Thou shalt not bag on the dude.
I got to tell you, can I just say one last thing about Squarespace? It is really nice having the portfolio app on your phone and it syncs with your site and pulls down high res things for your phone or iPad. And I think they have an Android version too, where I can basically have my website on my phone to show somebody stuff, which is
hey, did you,
really
speaking
handy.
Of phones,
yeah.
Did you order the 6S or the 6S Plus or 6 Plus S?
What is it? The 6XS Plus.
6S Plus, okay.
I and Conrad, we ordered Conrad a 6S 64 gig gray, space gray. Mm-hmm.
You got the rose gold, didn't you?
No, actually, I got the black. I like the black front. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I wouldn't have a problem with the silver or gold back, but I don't like the white front. So I have an appointment to do the payment plan thing. Cause I can get a new one each year or whatever.
With the Apple, so you're financing through Apple, right?
Yeah. I'm just going to do that. So that's,
and what is it? So it's $37, $38,
$36
like
for the one that I'm getting. Yeah. Like that. So yeah, I'm going down there on Friday morning, which at the Fifth Avenue store, which is like the big underground one up by Central Park. The problem is about five blocks away is St. Patrick's Cathedral and the Pope is in town. So,
right. Yeah. The Pope's going to be in DC tomorrow.
Yeah. So this is actually a problem. Well, it could be a problem. I don't know if it will be a problem, but it could be a problem.
I thought the Pope was on Android.
But
I don't know.
You like that?
Oh, he can't be. He's got to be an iPhone user. He's got to.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. Just seems like he would be.
I like the Pope. He books his own travel, apparently.
Really?
Did you hear this story? I heard a story. I don't know. It was on TV, some TV show or podcast or something, where the Pope, one day, the Vatican gets a phone call from some travel company. And they're like, some guy claiming to be Pope Francis was trying to book travel to so-and-so. And he's just like, and they were like, yep, that could be him. That's probably him.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. I like that a lot. It's pretty cool.
Sorry, Your Holiness, this won't fit in the overhead compartment.
Yeah, yeah. Red Dot camera app. I only put this in here just because I think it's funny all the different ways that people come up with to control cameras on these screens. Right. Did you click on this? Look at it. It's like, it's basically trying to be a Leica in your camera. It's got the little dials over on the left for ISO and shutter speed. And you got a little,
Okay. Other than the red shutter release, how is this a Leica? I mean, how is this not just any sort of generic?
I tend to agree with you, but I think that they're going for the Leica thing by claiming that it is Red Dot camera. You think that's just that they just happened to put a red dot there, or do you think that they were actually trying to be the camera for the people who like Leicas?
Okay, this is what the UI of a Leica looked
was,
like.
Yeah.
Was, is, yeah. You know, I don't like that.
You know what I do like, though? I do like the frame line thing they do. You see that?
The little faux bright lines. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. That's a good idea. So anyway, I just thought it was funny. And look,
here's what I'm waiting for.
Precision manual focus right there.
Yeah. What? Here's what I'm waiting for.
What are you waiting for?
You give me that sort of precision manual focus.
Yeah.
Force touch.
Oh, interesting.
That would be kind of cool.
So wait, how would it work?
You light touch.
It'll zoom in on that point, and then you can push and go up or down, and it'll focus a little bit.
Yeah, and then I don't know if how many levels of pressure sensitivity. It's not force touch anymore. They changed it. Right now, it's 3D touch.
3D touch.
Dun dun dun. But here's the thing: if you could go light touch to move the focus point around,
okay,
a little bit. If you want to do a little bit harder to take the picture, that would be cool. Or maybe there's if you do two finger, a little bit harder touch, and then move that around. You could do focus, fine focus.
Yeah, I got you. Is that how you want it to work?
I don't know. I'm thinking that people much smarter than I am are going to take advantage of this and make something really cool, because that's what's happened up to this point, right?
I'm interested to see what they do with this whole 3D touch thing. Although I don't personally, it doesn't personally blow my socks off. That's not why I'm getting the new camera, or the new phone. Ah, see, Freudian slip right there.
Right.
I really just want it for a new camera.
It's the haptic engine works pretty well.
Yeah. Jeffrey, it's a taptic engine. Please.
Right. Right. And then there's peak and poke.
It has to have a registered trademark after it, which means they had to change the name from the name that everyone else uses.
Right.
Also in the news, Sony has added. So did we talk about this when we were talking about the Sony stuff a few weeks ago? Okay. So just to back up for half a second, the Sony A7R II, which is like the new hotness camera, right? The 42 megapixel mirrorless camera that Sony has, was saving its raw files. Its raw format was compressed. It was not a data compression. It was actually like a lossy compression format that their raw files were in, which led to artifacts on high contrast areas, which is precisely where you want to play with stuff in raw. So a lot of people were like, look, this is not good enough. You know, you're giving us a $3,500 camera that's got a big giant chain around its ankle, you know? Apparently Sony has announced that they are putting a new firmware, which brings uncompressed raw to the new cameras, which is very good news. And a smart thing from Sony. And I don't know why in hell they didn't do this to begin with, but you know,
maybe it wasn't ready for prime time. Maybe they didn't anticipate the backlash. Yeah. You know, who knows?
You know, what's an interesting thing is that so many of these companies, it's just some engineer in a room who makes these decisions, you know, we can save some room on the card and get more pictures on there if we compress it. And the other guy goes, yeah, you know, who really cares if there's a little graininess around dark edges anyway? How many dark edges are there and stuff, you know?
Right.
And that ends up in the final product. It's crazy. Hmm. Would that make you more likely to get one or less likely?
I don't really dig the handling of the Sony A7R. I don't really dig the handling of the body, the ergonomics of it.
Yeah.
Not really a fan. I'm sure it does a great job.
By the way, the R2 is bigger and has more of a grip to it, just FYI.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to the brothers Connors yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
John, I can't remember what camera you used. I don't even know if I looked at it. Both Nikon shooters, but Chris uses a D700.
Okay.
Which is a really ergonomically friendly camera. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't want to go smaller.
Yeah.
I don't want to go smaller. And I've been really kicking around going back to a DSLR.
Yeah. You flip-flop on this a lot, don't you?
I do.
You're very torn.
I'm torn. That's why I still keep shooting with my X-Pro.
Yeah.
And I'm certain that when the X-Pro 2... this is the thing. I'm subconsciously just biding my time until the X-Pro 2 comes out, and they will have fixed all of the niggles that I have about the X-Pro 1 and included all the hotness in the X-T1, and it will be probably my perfect camera.
The X-Pro 1, I will say, just shooting with it for a day, it's kind of slow in doing things sometimes, like writing to the card and showing you previews and like, it's like, it feels a little like it's working hard to make it happen. You know, like the processor's not fast enough or something.
Well, that's, you know, we're coming up on a 5-year-old camera now.
Is it really that old?
Mm-hmm. I think.
Wow.
When did the X-Pro 1 come out? X-Pro 1. See, kids, this is what we like about being in studio.
See, when we're at home, we can do this kind of stuff. 2012. So I think it's 3 or 4 years old.
Okay. So 4 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was developed, you know, so you're looking at 4 year old tech.
Yeah. It's just interesting.
Speaking of things of that nature, older tech, I'm talking to my friend Lewis, who is a pilot. And he asked,
By friend, you mean somebody who talks to you?
Go ahead. Wait, is that the qualification?
Yeah.
Lewis is a pilot and was asking how I was digging DC and asked if I had gotten out to Hazy yet. And I said yes, because the SR-71 is there and that's my favorite plane ever. And he's like, yeah, pretty amazing that's 50s tech.
Yeah.
You know, and they could put the SR-71 back into service tomorrow and it would still be the fastest thing in the sky.
Yep. Yep.
1950s technology.
Yeah. I just love the fact that what is the deal that it has to, it leaks on the ground, but it seals up when you get into up higher?
It doesn't fit together 100% because it gets so hot when it flies that the metal expands.
That's so good.
Yeah. So it's leaking JP7 out onto the tarmac when they're taxing.
Yeah. That's great for the environment. there was an article in Luminous Landscape that I found this morning, which I just wanted to bring up as a question for you.
I like that site, so hit me.
It's a bunch of compositions of circular, like wide-angle circular fisheye images, right? This isn't like the Tiny World stuff that we played with before. This is actually just such wide-angle that it ends up being circular, right? My question is...
Oh, okay. I see what you're going for here.
I'm
going
to put a link in the show notes. My question for you is this. Like, why in the age of... digital, are we still stuck with rectangles? You know, how come we never do stuff like this or strange crops and that kind of stuff? I wonder why that hasn't taken off. Do you think it's just a holdover? Like people are used to seeing photographs being rectangular?
Sure. Yeah. I think that's part of it. I mean, I'm no art historian and I'm not qualified to talk about the cultural reasons or cultural bias against anything other than that. But I think two-dimensional art, by and large, has always been square or rectangular, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, and I guess that was because, you know, when you stretch a canvas, you know, it's hard. It's got to be pretty strong, right? To be able to hold the thing. So it ends up being rectangular, right? I guess that's probably why they did it. Or walls were rectangular, right? In a standard wall. And if you're making a fresco on a wall, I don't know. It's just interesting to me. I mean, there are examples, of course, of Madonna and Child. Da Vinci did one. Michelangelo did one in a circle. There's the Caravaggio Medusa. That's a circular painting. You know, there are examples of things out there.
I will tell you that I'm not really a fan of circular composition.
Art. Yeah, why is that? What do you think?
I don't know. The wasted space just annoys me.
Yeah. And I guess that's my, that was my question. I wonder, it's like, it's, I was just looking at these and I'm like, you know, this is really interesting, but I have never thought to do this, you know? I don't know. It's just interesting.
Yeah.
It's, excuse me.
You're
it
right?
doesn't, yeah, I just, water went down the wrong pipe. It's interesting that if you just crop a normal photo circular, it ends up just looking like a Facebook profile photo, you know, like the, like an iOS profile photo.
Or like
it's the wide angle that makes it interesting.
Rectangular to polar coordinate.
Yeah. Photoshop. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. So anyway, go check it out. It's kind of interesting though, this whole circular composition.
I much prefer circles or circular composition or sort of curvilinear lines, but within a rectangular composition.
Okay.
I like the tension. I like the visual tension of that. I guess because these are, yes, these are circles, but they're still presented within squares.
Yes. Probably because that's the way the web would do it, right?
Well, you could do a transparent ping.
Oh, yeah, I guess you could. Yeah, I wonder why they chose to do that. I guess you could also print them out and cut them, you know, stick a pin in the center, a little tiny pin, you know, slice all the way around to get a nice perfect circle. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. I was like, I never thought to do that. It's weird. I don't know. Hey, one last thing. The New York Times article, there was a New York Times article the other day. Well, actually it was yesterday, I guess. Talking about brands using images from Instagram, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm wearing Carhartt pants in a picture and somebody tags it with Carhartt and Carhartt takes that picture and reposts it on their brand page, is that okay? Without asking me? If by
they're reposting it?
Yeah. Or in this case, this woman, Shireen Way, did not think twice about posting an image on Instagram of her 4-year-old daughter wearing green dress and pink Crocs. She was wearing Crocs. She used a hashtag to identify Crocs in the picture, and Crocs used the photo.
This gets us back to...
Yeah.
You know,
but do you think putting a hashtag on something, I guess is my question, is putting a hashtag... in understanding of permission, usage permission?
Well, again, this is one of these legal questions that I'm...
No, I don't mean like legally. Qualified. I know legally they probably don't have the right to do it, but I mean just social contract point of view.
If you didn't want... You use the hashtag Crocs because you wanted that to be a marker of sorts.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe and for if, other fans of Crocs, not necessarily for Crocs.
Well, but you can't have brand. It both ways.
Yeah, that's my question, yeah.
I don't think you can have it both ways. I think if I'm going to say, hey, Bill and I are recording a walk and talk using these amazing, you know, Rodelink filmmaker kits from Rode Mics, and Rode decides to put that on their page, well,
we're the ones who said it.
I'm okay with it. And I can't speak for everyone else, but I would be absolutely flattered if they would choose something that I shot and said, hey, you know, here's somebody using our stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's me. I can't speak to the legality of it. I can't speak to what other people are comfortable with, but there is a little bit of me that's like, well, if you don't want people to share it, then don't put it on a sharing platform, because that's
right.
Kind of the, you know, that's kind of the core of that platform.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Now the problem with some of this stuff, and this maybe loosely ties into this, but one of the other things that has gotten a lot of brouhaha in the last, I don't know, week or so is the idea that Apple has now given iOS the ability to block ads.
Yeah.
And a couple things, you know, the way the web started out and where the web is now, I think you could argue are two completely different things.
Yes.
The web started out, and I'm sure somebody's going to correct me on this, but the web started out with the idea as a global platform for the free exchange of information and ideas. And that has since been usurped and turned into a giant shopping mall. Is that fair?
Yeah. If you're going to look at it in a very simplistic view, yes, I agree. I mean, that's the short form. Yes.
Yeah. We have this idea that
companies have taken over.
Yeah, everything has to be monetized and everyone is looking for content, capital C.
Right.
True. Well, so they're going to look for content everywhere. And with Instagram being such a hot button and such a great source of photography, look, I'm not one of these people who I'm not going to bash Instagram. I get fantastic stuff on Instagram. And for those of you who have the opinion that Instagram is solely for selfies and hipsters, I beg your pardon, but you're full of shit because that's not what it is. There are a lot of terrific photographers using
it. Just Instagram. Annoys me that I can only see them really little. That sometimes does drive me crazy.
Sure. Yeah, pitch zoom would be great. Fine. Yeah. But then you'd have people complaining that, oh, now people can download 2000 pixel images, versions of my image and use them in print. Well, yeah. Okay. So, you know, what do you want? What are we doing here?
Right.
So there's going to be a danger of it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I'm probably the wrong person to ask because I'm.
Yeah. I mean, the added thing, though, is that in this particular instance, an added thing would be that it's a little kid wearing the Crocs. It's like, well, you don't have permission to use the picture of the little kid. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a certain level of that because little kid can't make that decision on their own. Although, interestingly enough, Crocs wrote back to her on a comment and it says, we love your pick. In fact, we love to share photos like yours on our marketing, including social media, email, and in our stores and in print. Please reply with hashtag CrocsOK to signify your understanding and acceptance of our terms, and then a short URL to link to their terms. It's interesting. Remember how Bill, what the hell was the guy's name? The 50s photographer.
Now that's what? Strange.
Why? What part of it?
Well, so reply with CrocsOK to signify your understanding and acceptance. If you don't respond with that in X amount of time.
Yeah, they'll probably move on.
Is the photograph removed or is that photograph still left alone and left up on their feed?
Yeah, I don't know. Because it says that they used the photo without, found out afterwards. Mm-hmm. Much later, Crocs sought her permission. I guess it was apparently later that they did it. And this could be like somebody at Crocs screwed up, you know, who knows?
Mm-hmm. This is a new area, and we want to make sure our customers are dotting the I's and crossing the T's, said Sharad Verma, the chief executive and co-founder of Picora, which helps brands curate user-generated contents from sites like Instagram. It's important for brands to be very upfront and transparent about how these photos are being used. I completely agree with that. Federal Trade Commission, which polices unfair or deceptive practices, could step in if Instagram violated its own privacy policy or promises made to customers in its terms of service. But consumers have little resource or little recourse on their own other than pursuing costly legal action.
It's interesting, right? I mean, not the legal part about it, just like that's interesting to some people, but like I'm just talking about the idea that it's who's the guy, Bill, what's his name, the guy who took the picture like the little kid with the gun pointing the gun at the camera, 50s black and white, William Klein, right? How he said in one of those documentaries you watched, he was just like, you know, back in the 50s everyone wanted to be in front of the camera, it was like king for a day, right? You know, he mm-hmm, sort of brought mm-hmm. that up. In the same way, I think Instagram was like, oh man, Crocs wants to use my thing. Look, Crocs is using my thing. Hey, all my friends, Crocs used my picture. Like we're to the point now where we desperately want to be seen by as many people as possible.
Even
people who don't, by the way, you know, what's really sad. I looked up 50 street photographers in Google to like find William Klein's name, 'cause I couldn't remember it. First page, almost every single one of them is some kind of variation of a link to Vivian Mayer.
Huh?
Like literally all of them, except for one link to Fan Ho. And I'm just like, you know what? Vivian Mayer is not the only photographer from the 1950s. Google.
Right.
You find the William Klein picture? Perfect. Yes, that's the shot that I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's a good shot.
Yeah, it's a great shot. I'll put that on the show notes too. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting. Let us know what you guys think. Podcast on takingpictures.com. You all right?
I'm all right.
You're not running out of steam?
No, I'm looking at all these William Klein pictures.
God, he's
now.
So good.
Very good.
Yeah, he's real good. You know where you can get some pictures if you need them, Jeffrey?
Instagram? See what I did there?
Yeah, I like that. If you're making a movie and you want to produce some online content, there's no better creative resource than Pond 5, Jeffrey. Pond 5 is our sponsor for today.
Oh, sure. Until Pond 6 comes along.
Yeah, exactly.
Eesh. It's way better than Pond 4.
For video clips and motion graphic templates to music and sound effects. Man, all this stuff is great. I will tell you, as somebody who's made a handful of short films myself, once in a while, you need an establishing shot, or you need, you know, some crazy titles template or that kind of stuff. And you're just like, all the built-in stock ones stink and you can't find it. And you don't have crazy money to go up in a helicopter to take a video of going up across the bay in San Francisco. You can get this kind of stuff at places like Pond 5. It's great. Pond 5 video clips, motion graphic templates to music and sound effects. Pond 5 has all the amazing media you need to perfect your creative productions without exhausting your budget or your time, Jeffrey. Pond 5 supports...
time's important.
That's what I'm saying. Pond 5 supports its global community of artists with some of the highest payouts in the industry, meaning you'll always find the highest quality and most diverse content. And you know what? That's the kind of thing that our listeners... You got a bunch of extra photos because you went to Versailles. You want to stick them up and get as much money as you can for them? Go to Pond 5 and sign up and sell your wares.
Plus, or Versailles if you're in Alabama.
That's right. What, Versailles?
Versailles, Alabama.
Is there an actual place called Versailles, Alabama?
There is.
What's there?
Folks living the good life.
Oh, I
don't
see.
Know.
Okay.
I don't know.
I plan to go to Versailles.
I worked with someone at uni who was from Versailles, Alabama.
Versailles? Okay. Plus, Pond 5 provides a royalty-free license that lets you use your media whenever or wherever you need it. It's fantastic. It's fast and affordable, even more so with exclusive code for 25% off your next purchase. Just visit pond5.com, enter the code OTP at checkout, and you'll
what
be saving... OTP.
Right.
No, not JPK. It's... Or DLs. It's OTP.
Not DMZ.
And you'll be saving money and time faster than you can say action. I like that line. That's a good line. Whoever wrote that copy, bravo. Pond 5 is a one-stop shop for all your creative media needs. We save you time, money, stress with a single worry-free license. Pond 5 supports its international artist community with some of the highest payouts in the industry. Thank you very much to Pond 5 for supporting 5x5 and On Taking Pictures. We thank you very much.
Hey, not for nothing, but
there's nothing.
They have also, I'm looking at their site. They've also got almost 3,000 audio clips that are free, like free.
Music and things?
Music. Yeah.
That's
so
fantastic.
If you're putting together, like a slideshow or a presentation or something, variations.
Somebody playing Goldberg variations.
Symphony number 3, Symphony number 4 in A major.
You can bring out your inner Kubrick. Put some classical music behind your stuff.
Right. There's also public domain footage, like vintage sort of newsreel footage. There's some really cool stuff here.
Pond 5. See?
I wonder where the name comes from.
Good question.
Pond. Sure. It just seems like such an odd. Is it one of those? I wonder if it, is it one of those things where it's got to be something catchy so the kids remember it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with anything other than...
They're actually in an area where there's a lot of groundwater and their building is next to Pond 5.
Right.
You never know.
Could be it.
I wonder, interestingly enough, does not say on their website here. At least not that I've seen. FAQs, basically.
Well, this is kind of disturbing. If you need the sound effect of a body hanging from a noose on gallows, you can get it for $2.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you.
Hey, sometimes you need that sound. Just saying.
What's going to happen if I don't hire you to shoot my wedding? This is all you need to know, mister.
That's so dark.
Pretty grim, isn't it?
We're in pretty good shape. So why don't we we'll do some crit wall next week because we're running a little long. Is that all right?
I don't know. Let me look at this photograph.
Then you'll decide whether or not it's worth it. I like these ones.
Let me see. Look, I'll tell you. I'll tell you whether I got anything to say.
Oh,
these are good.
Yeah. Told you.
Riding my bike around the city. Oh.
I think they're pretty great. Especially the 1, 2, 3, fourth one with the sort of diagonal fluorescent light sort of in the middle.
You know who that reminds me of?
Who's that?
Crudson.
I could see that. Yep.
Who is on Instagram? Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think if it was Crudson, though, the person would be sitting out in the middle looking very sad.
No, not necessarily sad.
Okay, but blank.
Right.
That would be over here.
But there is somebody in this.
These are pretty great, right?
Let's talk about these. These are good.
Okay.
We're already talking about them.
All right. Go ahead. These are Dave Flynn's pictures.
We'll talk about the other thing, the mouse thing.
Yeah. Where is this Dave Flynn thing? Where is he? Is he in, what is this, Hong Kong? Where is this?
It looks like it. Yeah. Where are you at, Dave? Are you in? Lives in.
Come on, look at the one with the trash.
Taiwan. Lives
okay,
in,
there you go.
Kaohsiung? Kaohsiung?
Do you look at the one with the trash in the garages with the cross up above? It's fantastic. It's a great work. Interestingly enough, do you notice that so the shadows don't go black? Do you notice that? Like his blacks are not black. Do you like that or not like that, or does it make a difference to you?
I think, okay, if I go photo by photo, I think it depends, right? Okay. Let's go through these. Number one.
Yep.
Love it. To me, that goes black to my screen.
Okay. This is the one with the caged staircase.
Right, the black and white with the caged staircase.
Okay. That was one of my least favorite of them.
But okay. I'm not making a call on aesthetics. I'm just saying it goes black on the right side.
Yeah. That one does go black. Yes. But the color ones, he leaves the shadows just a little gray.
Yeah, number two, I love it. I think I would love it more if the person in the stall were not looking at the camera.
Agreed. But not that he directed it, but yes. Agreed.
Right, but compositionally, love it, how you colored it. I love the halo around the bare bulb there. The exposure is wonderful. Terrific.
The third one of what it looks like a shrine that looks like a man's Chinese theater, but yes, it looks like a little shrine on the street. This one feels weak to me, and I don't know if it's because there aren't any people in it that I could see, or it just feels like it's the perspective of so many of the other ones is more interesting than it is in this one.
Probably my least, you know what I would have done? I'll tell you what I would have done. I would have photoshopped out all of the lights on that building and let that area go to black. So these things, the lanterns just kind of go up into nothing.
Oh, see, I think that those buildings sort of echo the lanterns in a more modern way going upwards. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I do like this. I like the
composition. I feel like if you took this, instead of the composition like this, what if it was panned up a little bit and tilt the camera a little bit to the right? So what you end up with is sort of the shrine in the lower right corner, and you have the lanterns and the lights all end up sort of on diagonals.
Okay.
Radiating.
Interesting.
Up.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what else is out of frame, so I don't know. But the fourth one's my favorite. And
number four wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah. If you want to send me a print, let me know. And I would love to receive one. That's a beautiful photograph.
Send it to DC and I'll make sure Bill gets to look at it anytime he wants.
My butt. Six or five?
Five.
I feel like the color ones are better than the black and white, in my opinion.
I don't mind this. I may have gone down a third of a stop, maybe even a half stop.
You just like the cats.
I do like the cats. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who's the guy who shoots in Hong Kong or Tokyo with the little Rico? We used him as a photographer of the week once.
Saito Moriyama.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Number six. I love number six.
I really love it. I wonder what it looked like in color. I wonder if the color was good or not. But yeah, you like the guy on the bike.
I like the guy on the bike. I like the sort of trail out to infinity that you get from the overhead lights.
Yep.
Really nice stuff.
Number seven is one of my favorites.
Seven's fantastic.
Yeah. So four seven, and seven are my winners in my opinion.
I would agree with that.
Number
eight, nothing wrong with number eight. It's
but nothing special about it, right?
No. This feels the most snapshotty of all of them to me.
You know what's interesting though, if there was a guy passed out on those steps or something like that, that photo would be amazing. See what I'm saying?
You think it's the lack of any sort of?
Yeah, it's like nothing draws me in except for the big sign, and the big mm-hmm. sign is not enough, you know. And then number nine is good, but I don't think it's as strong as some of the earlier ones down these alleyways.
Right. But yeah. I mean, a terrific little mini portfolio, Dave. I mean, really superb.
I'm going to put a link in the show notes to this stuff. So anybody who wants to see it, it's also in the OTP group, which you can find on Google+. Yeah. He put these up a few weeks ago, but I was looking through today and I was like, these are really good.
Yeah. Sorry. We didn't get to them, Dave, but really nice work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Since Bill failed on that one, I'm going to blame him.
Wait, what did I fail on?
I don't know. I just don't want to be at fault.
Oh, okay. We just haven't done a crit wall in a few weeks is what
right,
it is.
Right.
Assignment. We didn't have an assignment last week, so everyone just had a free for all.
Right.
But, which is fine. But what yeah. What are we doing for next week?
Here, wait, darn it.
What did you just do? What just happened over there?
I just accidentally closed the stupid browser.
You know, you could command shift T and it'll open up the last. Or did you close the whole browser?
Close the whole browser. Okay. So again, some really fun stuff being posted. Max, I dig that mirror shot of the airplane. And I also love the black and white beach shot. Max Nex. You see that one?
Yeah, let me pull these up. Hold on.
what are you Freddie laughing at? Freddie put up a group shot from yesterday's meetup.
Yeah, that
meetup.
Was pretty funny.
that's great, Freddie.
Yeah.
Gardner, you know the score. You've been putting up some great stuff. Keep them coming. Love to
yeah,
see that.
Yeah. He put up a great picture. His first playing with a beauty dish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Came out great.
Weathersby put up his most recent booking photo. That was nice. I hope they release you soon, Justin.
When did Lauren Shin put this up? Lauren Shin put up as requested, a picture of my bathtub and cleaning fairy for David Gardner per my terrible example of things I don't care about in response to Gary Rossfeld's post. This is part of a Project 52 back in 2011. That's awesome. So she's like cleaning. She's like a self-portrait, correct? You think?
Yeah. Cool. Alex, cool. Nice shot. Oh Jesus, Freddie, you put. Okay. That shot of you guys all took that shot of me in that Mach 5. Did anybody ever take the photo of Chim Chim?
Who's Chim Chim?
The monkey from Speed Racer.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware of Speed Racer very much.
Ed Keir, shot on a Diana with Ilford HP 5+. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Go ahead.
Nothing. I was going to make a comment about the pictures of you and me and behind the lobster and the other thing.
It's frightening, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little scary.
Yeah. Danny Alexander, love that shot of the bridge and the sunset. Emmett, beautiful stuff from Glacial Lakes State Park. Where is that? Glacial Lakes. I have to look that up.
Glacial Lakes. Keep talking.
Beautiful stuff. Roger.
It's in Minnesota. I know.
That's funny. Roger says, I know, a bridge at sunset. But it was a specific request from my son-in-law because he used to live nearby. The Jamestown Bridge, Newport, Rhode Island. It's a nice shot, Roger.
Glacial Lakes State Park is in Minnesota.
Oh, neat.
Sort of west of, a couple hours west of Minneapolis by the looks of it.
Flo D, love, love, love. The kid with the Iron Maiden record next to him.
Yeah, let me see.
It's pretty funny. Sleeping.
All right, so what are we going to make people do?
My son can only sleep to Maiden.
It's so wrong. What are we going to make people do tomorrow?
Well, you said Circular. Oh,
Martin
oh,
right,
Rotz.
Circular. Ugh, damn Circular it. Good?
Let's I think I Circular. Can get around that.
All right. Hashtag Circular is the assignment for the week. That's so wrong. That was a bad joke.
Come on now. You know that was good.
Yeah.
Urban Bjorklund, this is a creepy shot of the girl in the attic. I love it, but it's really creepy.
Oh, let me see. I haven't seen that one.
Girl holding a teddy bear. It's kind of a M. Night Shyamalan type of a feel to it. It's nice.
Yeah, that's pretty creepy. People shouldn't hold teddy bears. You know what I'm saying? Just wrong.
You don't think so? Hey, what did you think of this, the thing that Tanya put up about the garage doors? I thought that was fantastic.
Wait, where? Wait.
Soviet era garage doors of Lithuania look like Rothko paintings.
Oh, I didn't see that. Wait, where is it?
It's a Slate article. Here, let me just paste it into Skype. You can look at. There you go. These are the garage doors, looks like from the 80s. Lithuanian photographer Agne, Gintalate? Okay. Would that be a hard G or a soft G?
Gintalate, I'd say.
Gintalate has documented a series of some 200 Lithuanian garage doors painted and weathered by the elements and time on the outskirts of Vilnius that look like Mark Rothko paintings left out in the rain. I love this. And cool. I love the way that they have been arranged in this sort of contact sheet of sorts.
You know, this is a good example of how a number of somewhat boring images could become more than they are if you get enough of them. So that,
absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
You know,
you could do the same thing with
like just one of these images would be like, okay,
dumpsters.
Purple doors. Yeah. Yes. One could, within reason, do the same thing with, say, dumpsters. It's true. I don't know why anybody would.
Hey.
But it's possible. Yeah.
Wait, I really like
these a lot. The pictures of you standing on the dumpsters from yesterday. Where does that happen?
David posted it.
Oh, I missed it. Okay, I'll find it.
Yeah,
find it.
It's up there.
Okay.
It's in his... He posted a photo album, and it's in the album.
Okay, I'll go find it.
Yeah, these are great. Nice find, Tanya. Yeah. Really nice.
All right, let's go to Photographer of the Week. Can you pronounce this? I'm terrible at pronouncing this stuff.
I'm going to go with Hiroshi Sugimoto.
Hiroshi Sugimoto.
Hiroshi-san. Sugimoto-san.
There you go.
Would it be Sugimoto-san?
You're asking the wrong guy. Get Matheson on the horn for
Matheson
that one.
Or Holger.
Yeah.
You guys
or
chime in. Would it,
Gorman.
Would it, is it, yeah, is it Hiroshi-san or is it the first name or the last name?
Yeah, so Alec Bourgeois sent this in. Middle class listener, Alec Bourgeois.
Nice. Wow.
Sent in, this Japanese photographer who's still alive, still kicking, still making great work, and does very different things seemingly each time. If you look at his work, it's just very eclectic, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are there's those pictures of movie screens where it's projected light on the movie screen. So the movie screen is like blasted white, right? Because
right.
It's like overexposed.
Right.
But the environment around it is lit probably by the light often.
Right. Empty auditorium, Radio City. There's one called Tri-City Drive-In.
Yep.
UA.
The drive-in
Playhouse.
Ones especially are fantastic.
Yeah. Now I saw these. I don't know if we talked about. I thought we talked about it. I know
maybe,
you and I talked about it. I don't know if we did on the show, but
maybe
I saw
that's
these.
That's why where we talked about it. So
yeah, I saw these at Photo Plus 2 years ago. I don't think they were there this year. They were there last year.
Yeah.
And maybe 16x20s printed.
Okay.
And terrific. They were like $45,000-$50,000.
Oh yeah, this guy is not messing around.
This is some serious stuff. This is, you know.
Yeah. What do you think about so I love the lightning ones as well, and I think he shows those in light boxes, so they're backlit.
Nice.
So they're
like on Duratrans or something.
Yeah, so they're transparencies like in front of backlighting, which would be the only way to do those, honestly, if you really think about it. You know what I mean? Because you want them to be luminescent unto themselves. Also interesting, what do you think of these ones? If you just do a search for him in Google, you get these seascapes where it's just right down the middle is the horizon. Water on the bottom, sky on the top.
Yep.
And he's got a number of them. What do you think of those?
I think they're interesting, and I got to quit using that word. I think they're compelling. I like them maybe because I like Rothko, and I like that hard separation of this area of the photograph from that area of the photograph. I like strong sort of compositional separation in photographs.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I like, you know, really punchy black and white. It's one of the reasons I like HP5 as a film. I like that. So these are very cool to me.
Yeah, they're interesting. These are definitely one of those things where they probably look great printed huge.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. They would look gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, sometimes it is just the simplicity, right?
Yeah. There's a series called Joe that's also terrific.
Yeah. And he does a whole architecture thing, too. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen some of these pictures of, there's this architecture picture of, and here's a small version of it right here. I'm going to send you a picture. Tell me this isn't just like bitching this picture. I would love like a giant print of this.
Wow. Where did you go? Pimp, bitchin', the 70s called. They want their vernacular back.
Yeah, look at this picture.
What are you doing?
Look at this picture and tell how pimp is that?
again with the pimp.
Doesn't that almost look like a render, you know?
Yeah, it looks like a render of like an IBM mainframe warehouse circa 1979 or something.
Isn't that awesome?
It's kind of cool.
I just love the composition, the structure of just those,
yeah,
with the light wrapping around them.
Looks so like one cool. of Matheson's architecture pictures.
Yeah. We're going to put this in the show notes. This one.
Good
I
stuff.
Love this shot.
Yeah. Good find. Hiroshi Sugimoto.
Yeah. So thank you very much to Alec for sending it in.
I like quite a few Japanese photographers that we've talked about. I like that aesthetic. I like there is a simplicity often in their composition.
Yeah.
The ones that we've talked about that I find very
satisfying.
Well, the simplicity, I don't know, there's a simplicity and a tension both at work.
Yeah.
And I find it really compelling. And I don't see that way much in the same way that people that do the kind of the Deutsch tilt, where you're throwing things just slightly off axis.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
And people that can do that intuitively, I have to think about it. I have to think about, okay, if I turn the camera this way to try and get that turned, you know, angled back the other way, and it never looks right. It looks like it was intentional. It looks like I was trying to do it rather than it just coming out that way. And I feel the same way about a lot of the sort of Japanese or Asian aesthetic in photography, in that I just don't see that way. And I always am fascinated by it.
A lot of the guys too that you're talking about tend to be older Japanese artists. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the same is true with really young Japanese artists as well.
Hmm.
You know?
Is it a cultural aesthetic?
Yeah, like maybe a older cultural aesthetic. You know, mm-hmm, like do the young Japanese kids care about this stuff, or is this sort of a holdover from a different generation?
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. If you want to get a hold of us, podcast@ontakingpictures.com. We are on the Twitters and on Instagram @BillWadman, @JeffreySidoris. What else? 347-687-9411 if you want to leave us a voicemail, Tom.
Yeah.
And what else you got?
What's new in Tom's world? Tom in Michigan.
Is that a website, Tom's World?
It'd be tominmichigan.com. Is there a tominmichigan.com? If there's not,
You're going to buy it for him?
I'm tempted to buy it for you, Tom. Tom in Michigan.com.
I think it might rain right now. Does it look like it's going to rain where you are? Oh, you don't know. You're in a basement.
Where I am, there are no windows and no doors.
You're in your cell.
That's right. When you leave, he'll turn on this televangelist real loud. Turn the volume way up.
That's so good. All right. You got anything else?
Nope.
All right. We'll talk to you next week, everyone.
All right. Have a good week, everyone. Thank you for listening. And, you know, get out and shoot some things. Have some fun. Get out and take pictures.
Pictures? What are those?
Ugh.
Bye.
See ya.
This way, say what you wanna say. so I can hear you think out loud. Going through your thoughts the way I have for too long. It's clear to me the way you see me is wrong. This way, say what you want to say. I know what you will say will leave me out, but I should hear it said aloud. Everything we tried to.